Ignite your potential and fuel your fire within. I am Ryan Stevens, and I'm here to help you own your spark with the Catalyzing Podcast. Let's do this. Fellow catalysts, welcome back to episode 51 of the Catalyzing Podcast, Protecting Your Flame, Burnout and Compassion Fatigue, specifically talking about the impacts of that in the workplace, healthcare, anything that is a high intensity job that involves providing a service and caring for others. And I'm so excited to have Erica Marcano join me for this conversation centered around professional burnout and compassion fatigue. We get into her passion for focusing on helping healthcare providers protect their flame, as she refers to it, and comparing burnout versus compassion fatigue. What does it look like and feel like to yourself, as well as what do others observe when that's happening? Burnout, we talk about Maslow's mismatches, and she kind of goes into that, what those contributing factors are to burnout. And we also talk about Baranowski's five stages of compassion fatigue, diving into that in detail. And lastly, prevention. What can we do if we're experiencing burnout or compassion fatigue? What can we do ourselves, but also as leaders, what can we do to reduce this likelihood of happening in our workplace amongst our team members? So definitely check out also the resource in the show notes, Five Things You Should Do If You're Experiencing Work Burnout. It's an article she wrote, and I posted the link there, as well as all of her contact information to connect with her on LinkedIn and Instagram, as well as her website, thenotoriousatc.com. But Erica, she's an athletic trainer, almost 20 years in the making now, with a variety of clinical experiences. She's trained in blood flow restriction and John F. Barnes myofascial release, and she's also certified pranayama, meditation, and yoga nidra facilitator. Make sure I get that right. During her time as an athletic trainer, she's worked in several settings, including the Division I setting, outpatient physical therapy, and high-end sports performance. And she served as an adjunct professor teaching both undergraduate and graduate curriculum classes. And she's involved in ongoing research on player safety and risk mitigation in rugby athletes, as well as methods to provide injury prevention strategies to the underserved youth athletes in New York, where she is. In 2020, she launched her own business, and she now offers a unique blend of high-performance services to her clients throughout New York City. In addition to working with one-on-one clients, she's made it a priority to dedicate time and energy to serving as a mentor and advocate for athletic trainers with a mission to combat burnout and compassion fatigue, utilizing both a bottom-up and a top-down approach. So that's about our girl, Erica. So excited to have her on the show here, and we're going to get into it just after we have a quick word from our sponsor. Leaders face challenges with team dynamics in a rapidly changing healthcare, wellness, fitness, and sports business landscape. This hinders collaboration and impacts the service you provide. As a coach, I guide teams to enhance positive team dynamics, shared leadership, and a fulfilling workplace culture. Just imagine improved morale, trust, effective communication, enhanced collaboration, and continuous learning leading to retention, growth, and service excellence. Ignite your potential. Fuel your fire within. Catalyzing Coaching and Consulting is your guide to creating an awesome team. So let's talk. Contact me at www.catalyzingats.com. You can find more information there, and let's set up your free discovery session. Catch the spark and own your spark. Welcome back, everyone, to the latest episode of the Catalyzing Podcast. We're talking today about how we can protect our flame, and I love that terminology. Erica Marcano spoke at the New York State Athletic Trainers Annual Symposium this year, and that was her topic, talking about compassion fatigue and burnout, specifically in athletic trainers, but more, you know, relevantly, of course, all across healthcare, wellness, busy professionals out there in human service professions. So Erica, thank you so much for taking some time to join us on the podcast today to break this stuff down, because it is a very, very important topic.
Thank you for having me. And it's funny, as I look at you in like my small little video screen, if you guys are watching on YouTube, it's funny, I even am looking at your catalyzing shirt and it's almost like a little flame at the top of
Exactly.
it there. So it feels very on brand for both of us to be talking about this.
100%, 100%. Erica, I'm known as the Notorious ATC on Instagram. You can also find her at www.notoriousatc.com. She is just passionate about helping be a resource through her own lived experiences while also providing ideas and framework for others to reduce the likelihood of experiencing burnout, going through and having challenges with compassion fatigue. So thank you, first of all, for everything that you're doing on social media and out there, the speaking engagements to raise awareness of this. So I want to dive into it. And I think it's really important before we kind of talk about compassion fatigue, burnout, I want to know what sparked your passion to focus on this for helping healthcare providers protect their flame.
So for me, it was something that I have gone through. And now looking back, I can see that I probably went through it multiple times in my career and didn't maybe have the verbiage to express what I was going through. So a lot of times I was saying like, oh, I'm just overwhelmed. I need a break. I need a vacation. Or maybe it's time for me to like transition to a different practice setting. And now looking back on it, I can see, oh yeah, here are the markers. Now that I understand more about what burnout is and what compassion fatigue is, I was clearly showing signs of those things, didn't know how to express them, to colleagues, to supervisors, and even to myself. And so I was always like seeking the transition from that, but I didn't really know what I was looking for because I didn't know what I needed to get away from. And so I want to help other healthcare practitioners. I mostly speak to athletic trainers, but really for everybody to be able to identify, what burnout and compassion fatigue are, if they or a colleague are experiencing it, and then not take, 20 years in their career the way that I did to find something that actually works for them as far as still being able to be passionate and love what they do, but also be happy with their life outside of work.
And your background for that nearly 20 years is, of course, in the realm of athletic training. You also do fitness coaching. You've worked in a variety of settings in both of those professions, clinical and non-clinical, over your career. So you've got a great background and perspective and experience of what it was like to go through it yourself in very busy environments, high pressure situations, both clinically and non-clinically. So that's just some perspective to keep in mind for everyone who's listening, that you've lived this and you've been through it and you're now advocating for others so they don't have to hopefully deal with these to the extreme level. Because there's different levels. You talked about the many levels of both of these, but what is the difference between burnout and compassion fatigue? It's easy probably to just think they're one and the same, but what is the difference and kind of what does it look like and feel like internally for us, as well as what do others observe in their team members who might be going through this?
Yeah, so burnout is really just like a big mismatch between the demands of your job and the resources that you have to handle those demands. And I want to make it really clear that that is talking about like long term or with no foreseeable end in sight, right? So I think we look at a lot of other professions. And I'm going to think about like accountants, for example. Like we probably all know someone who's an accountant. A lot of us, if we're small business owners, we are hiring somebody to do our taxes, and we know that they get swamped during tax season. And maybe that's a season for them where like they don't have a ton of time with their family. They're not sleeping as much, things like that. But it's a very short-term thing. They know to expect it. And more importantly, they know an expectation of when it's going to end. And in a healthcare or fitness professional, a lot of times there is not a busy season. It's just busy all the time. And sometimes, even when we get a drawback to that busy season, like I'm going to think about fitness professionals, for example, maybe over the holidays or like in August, if you're in a market like me where everybody goes away in August, then you're also losing your income. So there's not a real drop in stress levels unless you've budgeted for that. So those things are kind of contributors to burnout. Compassion fatigue really deals with the population that you're working with. And it's an example of how one of our greatest strengths, which is empathy and compassion, can feel like a weakness because we are so invested in our patients and our clients. And when they are experiencing chronic or persistent pain, we feel that pain with them and for them. And so, you know, burnout sometimes can be addressed by tweaking pay, hours, responsibilities, things like that. But compassion fatigue really has to do with the population that you're working with. And so if you're somebody who's experiencing one of those two, it's important to identify which one it is. That way, if you are seeking a change within your current job or potentially a new job, you kind of know which factors you need to manipulate to have success in the future.
And the fact that you talked about the expectation of an end, you know, knowing this is going to end at this date versus this is ongoing, that's a big part of it, because you can put it into a perspective of, all right, I just got to do this for the next month. And then after that, I'll have some downtime. But when that's not happening, or if that month is amplified to the greatest degree, you still, that month is maybe 2 weeks too long for that kind of schedule and that kind of responsibility. And it's just a matter of being aware of that and managing it. And I love how you talked about it being a mismatch. And I think that's a great way to put it, is a mismatch between your resources and what you're giving and what you have available. And, you know, I think we've all experienced burnout in a lot of different levels throughout our careers at different times. I'm sure there's probably a lot of common appearances to someone going through burnout and compassion fatigue. What are some symptoms, before we talk about those mismatches and talk about Maslow's mismatches, what are some specific symptoms that might be prevalent in both, but then also specific to burnout, specific to compassion fatigue?
I think a lot of the symptoms are similar, which is why people find them confusing. And so it's thinking about, like, really what are the contributing factors to those symptoms, right? And symptoms can be anything from, you know, feeling like you're on your way to work and you like don't want to go in, feeling like overwhelmed when you're there, feeling like you're trapped. We also see symptoms that contribute to the actual kind of output that you're doing at work. So for managers who might be listening, this is like a really important point for you. You'll actually see a decrease in the kind of level of care that's being provided by your staff if they're experiencing burnout or compassion fatigue. We've seen in the research that this is actually a contributing factor to the number of medical errors made by a person if they're experiencing burnout or compassion fatigue, and also the amount of empathy provided to the client or the patient. So it's really important to kind of notice if your staff is maybe experiencing some of these symptoms. And again, they might express it as like overwhelm or overload of responsibilities. Or, you know, they'll say things like, I feel like I don't have a minute to breathe, or, you know, the weekends are too short, right? And I feel like some of these things are very common, and we might all think, yes, the weekend is too short, but here it's like impactful on their work.
That's a big part of it. When we think about burnout and compassion fatigue as leaders, it's easy to look at the team and they're not producing, or there's a lot of errors happening, and think, oh, they're just not good enough, or they're making mistakes. And maybe we need to take a step back and say, hey, what am I a leader? Am I supporting them in recovery time? Am I supporting them in the characteristics, which we'll talk about later, of strategies to reduce the risk of this? Because it does affect outcomes, patient care, especially in a high stress situation like an emergency department or medical care, EMS, first responders. If you're burned out and it's a life or death situation, that might be the difference between a save and not a save. So it's so crucial that we talk about this and own it, and own what we can control with it to improve those outcomes. Because while not everything that the listeners for this show is doing is life or death, there is a lot of high stress situations and a lot of high stakes situations where errors can be significantly detrimental if they're happening because of these problems.
Absolutely. And when we talk about like resources, like a mismatch between job demands and job resources, we have to think, okay, some of those resources, like on the individual, right? If you're a manager, you cannot control if your employee is a primary caretaker for an aging parent. You cannot control if they have a new puppy or a young child at home and they're not sleeping well. but you can control and manipulate things within the workplace. So when you think about the resources that they have available, the resources shift over time, and that goes for internal resources of the employee themselves, not to do with their jobs, and then external resources, which you might be able to manipulate.
Let's dive into those resources a little bit, but more importantly, those factors that create a situation where there's burnout. You referred to Maslow's mismatches during your presentation. Let's break that down a little bit. What are those contributing factors to burnout that are occurring?
Yeah, so these are from an eminent researcher on burnout, and Maslow broke down six mismatches that happen in the workplace. So again, if you are someone who's struggling with burnout yourself, this is a place where you can say, I think a lot of times we internalize burnout, right? And we say like, it's me, like I just can't cut it. Here's some things you can look at strategically and say, okay, like this is not me. This is coming from something larger than me. And again, if you're a manager, not to say that you're at fault here, even if you're a CEO, right? Not to say that you're at fault here, but here's some things that you might be able to flip a switch on and change this for that employee. So number one is the workload mismatch. And I think, we've kind of touched on that a bit, but it's just when the workload is too demanding, and that can be too demanding, like time-wise, too demanding skill-wise, or just incongruent, right? So it might be that employee is at the right level position, and these are the right demands for that level position, but the employee was misplaced somewhere, that the demands are not matching really what they are the best at. That happens a lot in healthcare, especially. You know, you promote your best workers, but what they might be best at is managing patients, not managing other staff. Mm-hmm. And so that would be like an example of a workload.
Very good point.
The next one is a control mismatch. So that is where the employee is given significant responsibility. So if you're a mid-level manager, this might be you, you're given a lot more responsibility. But with that responsibility shift does not come a shift in the things you have control over. And that can feel really, really frustrating. And that can be a contributor to burnout. The next one, I think we discussed this a lot. If you're an athletic trainer listening to this podcast, maybe even a PT, reward mismatch, where you feel like your financial compensation is not a match to the skill set that you have, the degree level that you have, or what you're providing for your company. Financial compensation is a big one. This also could be like social recognition in the workplace. And it also could be, even just direct one-on-one acknowledgement, all of those things kind of go into rewards. And this is a place where as a manager, you have to say like, okay, what are my employees' values and how do they want to be rewarded, right? So I've seen a lot of places who do company social outings and employee of the month, or PTA companies where if like you don't have any cancellations on your schedule, the host staff gets like pizza that Friday or something, right? Mm-hmm. But is that in alignment with your employees' values? Does that really make them feel recognized? Because if it doesn't, then it's not truly a reward. And that's an example of a mismatch there.
That's a great point. It's the total package of feeling valued, and that is not financial and non-financial aspects. But that's a great point that you made about, is this what my employees value? And I think it's very important for hiring managers and for leaders to be very transparent and two-directional in conversation with their team about what they can offer, as well as what are they looking for? What are the expectations? How will you feel valued? If this is happening, this will mean I will feel valued. And being transparent with that comes from good communication and openness and transparency.
Yeah. And I mean, going outside the box when you're looking for these things, right? So I one time had a manager tell me like, we literally don't have the budget to give you a raise right now, which to hear that is frustrating. But then she said, but I can move you to this position where you'll have, it's responsibilities that I already was doing. And she was like, if I can put you at this level in the system, then I can pay for 100% of your healthcare benefits instead of you having to kick in for your healthcare benefits. Now, that was something small. It's not the same as seeing a bump in your paycheck, but like it kind of is, right? And it showed me that she was willing to think outside the box, that she was looking for ways to compensate me financially, even if she couldn't give me that official raise at the moment, right? And so not only did she you know, make an impact on my paycheck, but she made me feel like, okay, this person has my back and is going to keep looking for opportunities to provide me with rewards when she can.
Very powerful, very creative. And that was a great thing because it made an impact ultimately on your monthly finances, just in a different way. Yeah.
Exactly. So like, you know, rather than saying like, oh, I can't do anything about this, looking for ways where maybe there are loopholes or factors you can manipulate that would help that employee.
Awesome.
So there's three more. One is a community mismatch. So that can either be like social isolation, or it could just be like this chronic conflict with colleagues. So as an athletic trainer, I always say like to remember, this is not just your athletic training colleagues who you might have a great relationship with, but never see, because if one of you is home in the athletic training room, the other one might be on the road with the teams, right? So that is where you can feel like that social isolation piece, even though you have somebody you have a great relationship with. The other thing might be people that you're surrounded by all the time, which in athletic training might be like a coaching staff, but yet you're at odds with them because their star athlete got injured and you had to hold them out of practice for medical reasons or whatever the case is, right? Or you just feel like you have to put up a guard or a boundary because you don't want at a later date them to take advantage of like a close friendship or anything like that, right? So sometimes these constructs are things that just happen. Sometimes they're things we put in place ourselves as boundaries, but it can result in us feeling isolated or in conflict. And that also is a mismatch. A fairness mismatch. So sometimes I think in fairness, a lot of times, again, people go back to like, oh, I'm not being fairly compensated. But this has to do with, yes, unequal pay, unequal workload. And we can think about gender disparities when we think about things like that, right? And think about big picture things. But this can also be something small, like unfair employee evaluations, promotions that you feel were inappropriate, or, you know, grievances that you brought that weren't handled properly. So I can think in my career of all three cases. You know, this could be something you brought to HR and then it turns out it never got addressed because, you know, the person was a big donor to the nonprofit that you work for, right? So it was swept under the carpet. Or one patient was behaving inappropriately, but we don't want to like lose the patient because the customer is always right. So we're just going to like segregate them from the other patients. You know, when I think about inappropriate evaluations, I'll never forget this one time, like the only not five star that I got on an evaluation was for dress code. And we were business casual. So I was like, how do you mess up business casual? And my boss was like, oh, nobody gets a five on dress code. And I was like, well, what would it take to get a five on, like, do I have to wear designer clothes? Like, what does that even mean? Yeah. Nobody gets it, right? So the small things, but those are just little examples. And then the final one is a values mismatch. So this can be very, very serious. Like you're working for a company who you feel is doing things unethically, that you feel like this does not align with like my values, and I'm starting to get like the ick about working here. It also could be just a mismatch in what the company is like presenting forward facing to potential clients, as opposed to what you know is going on back of house. But again, there's like that mismatch in values or ethics.
And with all of those six categories, there will always be times, probably moments where we have perception of those occurring. And then we think we have to really take a personal inventory of, is this just a momentary feeling of that? Or is this a chronic, is this beyond me? Is this something that is the environment that I'm in? Is this something that is just happening repeatedly over and over? You talked about the fairness, the perception. I think the two parts of it, it's the perception of you as the team member and as the leader of, I feel this is fair, versus the reality, if an outsider was looking at it from a neutral position, would they say this is equitable, this is fair? So that's really important to keep in mind. And all those things, they pile on us, they burden us, and they lead to more likelihood of burnout. So thank you for sharing those. Let's switch gears over to the compassion fatigue. I'm sure there's a lot of common, those things you talked about, of course, can lead to that. But this is more about the care that we provide, the service we provide, and who we provide it to. And you referred to Baranowski's five stages of compassion fatigue. Let's break that down a little bit.
Yeah, I love them. I feel like the names are a little bit funny. So there's it brings a moment of levity to something that's quite serious. But I definitely feel like if you're a healthcare worker, that these will apply to you. And, you know, again, just talking about compassion fatigue, if there are people who are out there who don't know what it is, you know, a lot of the research maybe hasn't been done in a lot of different healthcare fields. The research that I was doing when I was like looking to learn more about this, a lot of it was in nursing, a lot of it was kind of in like palliative or hospice care, and then a lot of it actually was in vets, who are trying to deal with the animal as their patient and then human owners. But I read this quote from a doctor, and she said, I have it in front of me, she said, "The expectation that we can be immersed in suffering and loss and not be touched by it is as unrealistic as expecting to be able to walk through water without getting wet." And so again, I just want to like take a moment to acknowledge this is, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh yeah, I think I might actually have compassion fatigue now that I know what it is, right? It's not a you problem. It's that your strength also can be a weakness if you're not like protected appropriately. So Baranowski and Gentry, who did a lot of research on this, they came up with five stages of like progressing through compassion fatigue. And burnout has a similar, like there are 12 stages of burnout if you ever wanted to like look into that. But these stages, the first one is zealot. So I think everybody can identify with this when you're like excited about a new job, especially if you're a new grad and you're going into your first job, right? So you're super excited. You're like, I'm here to do all the things. You're taking on extra work. You're spending extra time with patients. You know, you're picking up shifts from like your coworkers. You're sticking around after work to like just soak up things from your older colleagues. That's what they consider your zealot stage. Now, if you're a manager, you might be like, this is a great employee. But as a manager, after hearing this, I'm hoping you recognized, okay, if I don't reel this person in, they might be somebody that's going to be vulnerable to burnout, compassion fatigue. So just to keep an eye on them. The second stage, as it progresses and you start to like struggle with all the extra demands you've put upon yourself, is irritability. So now suddenly you are starting to like take shortcuts. Maybe you're like late on getting your notes done. You're getting a bit distracted when you're in clinic. Interacting with patients and colleagues starts to become like an effort. And this is when mistakes and oversights start to happen. And they're probably going to be small things that like colleagues or supervisors would overlook, but you're starting to go back and have to make those corrections.
Poignant that we're only on stage two and you're already talking about mistakes starting to happen. Very important.
Exactly, right. And hopefully there's like I said, small mistakes that you can catch, but just know that that element is in there, right? The third stage is withdrawal. So if you're somebody who's experienced this might be when you catch yourself feeling like something is wrong. Because here you're starting to, when you talk about work, you're complaining about work. And if you're not complaining, you don't want to talk about it, right? You come home, your partner is like, how's your day? You're like, ugh, I don't even want to talk about it. Like, how was your day, right? Exhaustion starts to feel normal. So like the falling into bed, passing out, can barely drag yourself out of bed in the morning. That's just like how it is. So that should not be normal, but I think for a lot of healthcare professionals, it is. You can start to neglect pieces of your personal life in an effort to keep up the same amount of energy in your professional life that you initially had, but your enthusiasm is missing. And that can leak over into all aspects of your life. The fourth stage is the zombie stage. That's what they call it. So this is when you're really feeling like disconnected from your work. You're almost like disembodied. This, I think a lot of times is when we start to hear people like, one of the biggest things in PT I can think about is you stop referring to patients by like their names, and you're like, oh, like, you know, the ACL, or like, oh, you know, like the shoulder scope, right? You're disconnecting like the personal pieces of your work, and you're kind of just going through the motions, and you start to lack the empathy and compassion that you had for your patients. So you're going to notice that, and you're going to feel like less fulfilled in your work, and you're going to really be struggling. your patients are going to notice and probably your colleagues are going to be noticing. And then the final stage, fifth stage, can split one of two ways. So basically they either put it as like a pathology or a renewal. So we all know what pathology means, but the way that what they mean it as is that you end up in this perpetual state of overwhelm that again feels never ending. You start to develop physical symptoms. Those could be like mental health. Those could be GI symptoms are very common. Immune system depression is very common. And eventually this is where people think like, I think I need to leave the profession. And then going in the other direction is renewal, right? We like realize what's going on. We say, I need to step back. And we figure out a way to transform. So whether that means moving to a different job setting or just changing our approach, but that develops resiliency when we can go through that piece of it. Usually for that, there's like a wake up call element of it. And then we also need support. And that support can come from people in our personal life or hopefully people in our professional life who can support us in the transformation.
Wow. It's as you painted that picture, I can just pick, you know, I can just visualize people I've come across and worked with in my career in those different stages. And, you know, you can pick that up as a colleague, as a coworker, as someone who's in another department, and you're seeing what they're doing. And you know, when you paint it like that, it makes you think maybe they're just not slacking. Maybe they're not just, you know, not picking up on projects and strategies. They're just not able to do it because of these underlying factors. And that's a great bridge into how do we take action on this? You know, how can we prevent this from happening beyond just simply as leaders and as team members, having an environment of openness and vulnerability where we can say, are you okay? I'm seeing X, Y, and Z. You're not passing judgment. You are making observations, you're having a candid conversation with someone out of care. I think that's overarching something. We need to have that environment in place in a workplace that people feel comfortable doing that. Because the stuff that you talked about in that first stage, those are high performers. And we want high performers, but it's a matter of we got to make sure we can refill our own cup before we expect it to be able to pour it into others. So let's dive into that as we wrap up here. Prevention and calls to action for how do we keep this at a minimum and address it when we do start to see it?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, it's a lot of the same skill sets that we use with our patients and clients, but it's really hard to put that lens on for our colleagues or, you know, people working on our team. We do tend to view them as like, oh, they're being lazy or they're slacking or they're not committed or they don't care enough, right? Instead of the way we would look at somebody who's struggling with their rehab or non-compliant with their home exercise program, we don't say those things about a patient, right? We say like, okay, I need a different strategy to approach them with. So it's definitely about having empathy and compassion for our colleagues and our team members. And then also if this is something that you're struggling with individually, understanding that this is not, you know, a weakness of yours. This is not like, I can't hack it or I wasn't cut out for this. It's again, looking at those things like, okay, what type of caseloads am I working with? What's my input here? And how can I kind of change how I'm receiving that information and what I'm giving back out? I would say for the individual, one of the best things you can do is to look at like, what are the factors that are contributing to your burnout or compassion fatigue? Mm-hmm. And then of those factors, which ones do you have control over? Looking at like a lot of people throw time management out there as a strategy to combat burnout. I would talk about looking at energy management instead. And that can be as simple as like noticing, you know, when in the day your energy ebbs and flows and making sure that your tasks are appropriate to that. So for example, we're doing this at like 2 p.m. A lot of people would be hitting that 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. crash right now. For me, it's very important to be people facing at that time, because being with people is energizing to me. But if I was sitting here doing my clinical notes, I would have like absolute no inertia, right? So that's a way that I manage my energy. Gathering resources for yourself. So I talk a lot about, you know, if you're stocking your medical kit, to work on a road trip, you would go in there, you would make sure that after the trip, you're replacing anything that you used up. So if you've had a particularly difficult week or day, are you restocking your energetic kit the way that you would restock your actual physical medical kit, right? Like, what did you use up? What did you give out? And how can you replenish that for yourself? And then just every once in a while, like checking in with your why, because that changes over time. So your why when you graduated college might be really different now that you're married, you have a family, you know, you've been practicing for 20 years, whatever. So sometimes the why is the same and you just need to like rediscover it and reconnect. And sometimes you need to say like, okay, maybe it is time for me to move on and do something different. And there should be no guilt or shame in that.
I think that is so important.
Managers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're thinking about, okay, how do I keep my staff out of these situations? I would just think about boundary setting. I feel like that's a very overused term, but encouraging your staff to set boundaries, teaching them how to do it, and then respecting the boundaries that they set. Looking at what each person's goals are. So one of my mentors, I'll never forget, one time said to me, we were talking about promotions and who deserved promotions and all the things. And he said, you know, you can't win with an army full of generals. And that is so true. Like not only can you not promote everybody, not everybody wants that promotion. Everybody doesn't have the same goals. And so if you're thinking, oh, this would be my goal, so I'm going to put them in this position, making sure that you're checking in that that's actually what they want, right? Because again, yes, you might be giving them that raise, but you're giving them more responsibilities, more hours. That might not align with actually like their work-life balance, their goals for their families, all of those things. I think it's managing people's workloads when they can. So whether it's days working from home, keeping the schedule to 8 hours a day and hiring per diem help if you can, looking at, you know, whose priorities are what, right? Is somebody willing to like grind for their paycheck or is somebody more concerned about having weekends free? That's individual for each person. And because people want different things, it's actually sometimes easier to manage a staff whose goals are all different than it would be if everyone had the same goals. What else? I think giving them control where you can, right? We talked about that in burnout. So letting them have some autonomy where it works. And then just making sure that when you're rewarding them, that it's aligning with the company's value system and their value system. Because those rewards are going to feel a lot better. You know, does your staff really want to have like a blowout Christmas party where they get to get all dressed up and socialize with everybody and this is like a big company event and they love it? Or would they rather see that, you know, $250 you're paying for that dinner person in their bonus at the end of the year? All right, so thinking about those things I think is helpful.
That's a powerful checklist of action items, not just for us as professionals, but also for leaders who are monitoring this. And ultimately, if we set up that environment of openness, of trust, of affirmation, of not passing judgment, but respecting everybody's own values and looking at what their goals are, it makes all this a lot easier to have these conversations and to implement these action strategies that you just talked about. So, Erica, that was awesome. Thank you so much for all that. I'm going to put you were interviewed and there's a great article, 5 things you should do if you're experiencing work burnout. I'm going to put that in the show notes here for this as well. Of course, if anyone has any follow-up questions, easy to find on Instagram as NotoriousATC. Also, your email will be in the show notes, your website, thenotoriousatc.com, and also can find you on LinkedIn if they want to connect professionally. So thank you so much, Erica, for bringing this topic to light, for talking about it, for openly presenting your learned experience through this, because that just brings it to another level. You're not just talking about it, you've gone through it. And you are framing it in a way that others can understand it really well.
Yeah. And thank you for like reminding everybody that this is like important to talk about and that there's no shame in talking about it, you know. And I know I threw a lot at your audience, but I'm hoping that, you know, even one tip or one strategy resonates with people, no matter, you know, what your workplace setting is or what your responsibilities are.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Keep doing the great things you're doing. Keep that spark alive. Protect your own flame so you can remind us how we can protect ours. So thank you, Erica, so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Let's do this. Are you